Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, on the eve of the NFL draft. I know it's obnoxious. I know we talk about it nonstop. I know I've been obsessed with it for years, and I know you're over it. Tomorrow night, Friday night, I sit in front of a television, take notes, so happy. Joy Taylor is joining us. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. I was going to say, happy draft eve.
That's what it is for me. I feel like it's Christmas Eve. Draft Eve, Christmas Eve. So, there's new information today. This from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter used to work in Denver. So if Adam Schefter ever has information on a Denver team, it's money. Or the Shanahans, it's money. Because Mike Shanahan created that dynasty in Denver. Schefter is very connected to the Shanahan family. More than any reporter in America. So this information is either true or it's out there for a reason, leaked for a reason. The information from Schefter. As much as the Niners love Mac Jones, and they do, I believe the gap between Mac and other quarterbacks like Trey Lance has been narrowed considerably. I can tell you over the weekend, they did not know who they were going to take. Now, I believe they're going to take Mac Jones. It's not what I would do. But as I told you over the last couple of days, they're protecting their butt. Chicago drafted Mitch Trubisky, went all in, had no interest in Deshaun Watson. Now they look like idiots. Trubisky's a bust. Deshaun Watson's very good. Had Chicago gone in and said, we love them both. It's a 50-50 proposition. Leak the story. But God, Deshaun's ACL. Then the GM and the coach, if they get fired, can get another job and not look like they like Trubisky significantly over Deshaun Watson, which is insane. Just like liking Mac Jones over Justin Fields or Trey Lance to me feels insane. But if you pick Mac Jones, there's a strong likelihood that Trey Lance ends up in New England because the story today is New England's moving up. And if Trey Lance goes to New England, sits behind Cam for a year, gets Belichick, that offensive line, and Josh McDaniels, he is going to crush. And if Mac Jones doesn't do well, and I think he would struggle some against, I don't know, the best division in football, especially early, and then Trey Lance in 2 years is rolling, you look really foolish, and you got a losing record. And the fourth best quarterback in your division behind Kyler Murray, Matt Stafford, and Russell Wilson. So I think this is a little bit of San Francisco. They like Mac Jones. They want Mac Jones. And they want to cover their butt a little bit to say down the road, hey, we love Trey Lance too as he's starring in New England. But I want to talk. Everybody thinks the risk is taking Trey Lance. I think the risk is Mac Jones. And I'll tell you why. If you're a 49er fan, and I know we all roll our eyes because fans can be emotional. Fan is short for fanatic. But I want you to take yourself into the eyes of a San Francisco 49er fan. The draft is over. It's Monday. If I was a 49er fan Monday and we draft Trey Lance and we keep Garoppolo, I'm thinking, all right, I got the quarterback that got me to a Super Bowl and I got a guy physically who needs some development, but he can go toe-to-toe with Mahomes, Josh Allen, as a runner, as a size, as an arm. That's a good Monday for a 49er fan. I got the now win guy. I mean, Garoppolo's 24-8 against, or 8-3 against the NFC West, but he's 24-8 as a starter, got to a Super Bowl, won a division against Russell Wilson, against the Rams. So I'd feel great Monday morning if I was a Niner fan. I got the guy that got me into a Super Bowl. I mean, I crossed my fingers on his health. But when he's healthy, we win our games. And then I got the future, this wild, crazy, high-ceiling athlete. That's a great Monday. What I don't want Monday is we traded Garoppolo so we could draft a win-now quarterback and by week eight, he's playing, and he's not clearly anything close to Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson athletically, and has a BB gun compared to Matt Stafford as an arm. That's a bad Monday. So I don't get the win now guy or the high ceiling guy. And I think it all comes down to not Mac Jones or Trey Lance, because I would take Trey Lance. Because my belief is Kyle Shanahan's, all five of these guys would win with Shanahan. All of them. I've even said, I don't like Mac Jones. I think he'll win. You're not going to win the divisions. You're not going to win Super Bowls. You're going to win with Kyle Shanahan. He went with Matt Schaub. He wins with Kirk Cousins. He wins with everybody. He made Matt Ryan an MVP. Okay? He wins with it. All of these guys will work with him. But why would I want a low ceiling? But it doesn't come down to Mac or Trey. It comes down to Jimmy Garoppolo. The Niners, rightly so, are concerned that Garoppolo not only can't stay healthy, he gets hurt in September. And if he gets hurt again, he has no value. Nothing. You can't get anything for him. That's true. But couldn't I argue this? In a world we live in today, where even the Niners give up multiple first round picks, to draft a college quarterback where they don't know if he'll succeed. Who cares if you don't get anything out of Jimmy Garoppolo? Just think about this. You only gave up a second rounder for him, and he got you to a Super Bowl. He won you division title. If he gets hurt and Trey Lance has to play a little early, all right, wasn't meant to be. But don't be paralyzed. I thought about this driving in today. You really got everything out of Jimmy Garoppolo you could want for a second round pick. I mean, he came with an injury history, right? He came with one. You didn't know if he was going to be great. That's why you only gave up a second round pick, and that's why New England only got her a second round pick. I mean, these quarterbacks out of college now are getting three first round picks. Okay. Jimmy got a second. He got you to a Super Bowl. Just don't worry about it. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt, and Trey Lance plays earlier than you'd like. But do you really think Mac Jones is ready to win the NFC West over Russell Wilson, Matt Stafford, and Kyler Murray? If San Francisco just thinks about it this way, we got everything possible out of Jimmy Garoppolo. And you don't worry about getting anything in return. We didn't pay him $30 million. We didn't pay him $40 million. We gave up a second-round pick. You could get a second-round pick now for a right tackle. And he got us to a Super Bowl. So we don't care what we get out of him. Let's just keep him as long as he's upright. We're not going to sign him to another contract, but we're going to keep him as long as we can, cross our fingers on health, and let the much greater athlete with a much bigger arm and the much better body and the much higher ceiling, Trey Lance, develop. That, to me, feels low risk. I got the win Super Bowl now guy or get to the Super Bowl now guy. I got the high ceiling guy. If I'm San Francisco fan and I wake up Monday and I got lowest ceiling guy in the toughest division with three super talented quarterbacks and I don't have Garoppolo, so I'm probably not going to be great now and I'm not sure I'm going to be great later. Instead, if Garoppolo's healthy, we're really good now, can win the division, and Trey Lance has a chance to be a superstar later. Nobody thinks Mac Jones going to be a superstar. He's Kirk Cousins. So I know we roll our eyes at fans, but if you're a fan Monday, I'd feel way better about keep Jimmy G, squeeze every last ounce of juice out of that orange. Like, who cares what you get for him? You only give up a second-round pick for him, and then I get the ceiling guy. But the story is interesting because it comes from Adam Schefter. He's tied to the Shanahans. What would I do? Take Trey Lance, keep Jimmy G. What are they going to do, my guess? Trade Jimmy G, fear that he gets hurt, they get nothing, and take Mac Jones. And this is just covering their butt, showing a little interest for other guys. All right, so The Herd, by the way, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. So the Buccaneers did sign Antonio Brown, eventually. Team-friendly deal. So this is noteworthy, and I'll read this to you. The Buccaneers have all 22 Super Bowl starters back. Only team in the Super Bowl era to do this. All of them back. Their top 16 snap count leaders on offense back. Their top 21 snap count leaders on defense back. All the coordinators back. Head coach back. Never been done. Unprecedented. And I don't remember the last NFL team that had this many Pro Bowl level players on it, but with no holes. Seattle's got a high-end players, but they got some holes in the secondary. The Rams, again, they got some star players, but they got some holes. The Dallas Cowboys have star players, but a lot of holes in the back end. The 49ers, by the way, great players, but holes. It is virtually, in the last 15 years, I cannot think of a roster that's got stars everywhere and essentially is just drafting for depth. They're going to probably take a quarterback and a running back, and none of those guys will play. Anybody they draft, not going to play much. This, of course, is the opposite of what Green Bay is willing to do, because Tampa Bay has an advantage. Their history is overwhelmingly briefly great or irrelevant. So Tampa Bay doesn't feel a burden to be relevant. I covered the Buccaneers. I was there. They were irrelevant when I was there. I left. They got relevant great fast. Tampa Bay's entire history is great briefly or irrelevant. There's no pressure. It's like newfound money. It's not family money where you're protecting grandpa and dad's money. Tampa Bay's never had any money. This is their 15 minutes of fame. They don't give a rip. They're going to go all in. Green Bay, meanwhile, is so terrified of the lows, they're not willing to push any money down the road to get highs now. If you go look at Favre and Aaron Rodgers, they only won Super Bowls early in their career when they weren't expensive. The minute Favre and Rodgers did not win Super Bowls is after their big contract. Because in order to win a Super Bowl, when you're paying a quarterback a lot, you got to push money way down the road. But Tampa doesn't care. Arians is going to retire in a couple years. Brady's going to retire in a couple years. The history of the franchise, the owners, we've been irrelevant for decades. We're fine. Sometimes there is an advantage to not having a great history. I've said this before. When I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, the University of Washington had a history of being very competent for about 30 years with Don James. So when he left, they played it safe. A lot of anybody connected to Don, they hired. They didn't want to take any big risks. Oregon was irrelevant my whole life. And so they would take big swings on coaches. Chip Kelly from New Hampshire, they didn't care. They had 300 uniforms. Washington once tried to change uniforms. The fans were outraged. USC deals with some of this now. Their history, they're paralyzed by it. Oregon was never paralyzed by it. They had no history. They named a stadium after a coach with a losing record. They just went for it. 300, do this, do that. You're not beholden to anybody. And so Tampa Bay's got no history. So they don't give a rip. They're going to push all the money down the road, win now, max their credit cards, take a big risk, try to win another Super Bowl. It'll be somebody else's problem in 2 years that they have no money. They're going to do what the Saints did. And by the way, why did the Saints go all in on Breeze? What is their history? Great briefly or awful. And so Saints are like, we're going all in. If we win a second Super Bowl with Breeze, we don't have to win a Super Bowl for 10 years. Stadium's packed. But Green Bay has been so competent and so capable for 30 years, they are terrified of being irrelevant like they were in the 70s and 80s, and they won't push money down the road. They could easily push Aaron's money down the road. Easily. They won't do it. They're terrified by it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
My buddy Nick Wright, first things first, joining me now live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So there is a story this morning that the Patriots and the Panthers have done the groundwork for the number 8 pick. Now, you wouldn't necessarily do it this morning. You would sit and wait to see what Atlanta does. Atlanta, you know, so they're laying the groundwork. They made calls saying, basically, if Atlanta doesn't take a quarterback, you know, we know Cincinnati's not. Your take on the Panthers moving back, the Patriots moving up, just kind of your thought on the story that developed today.
All right, so my immediate reaction to this story was I thought of you, and I almost sent you a congratulatory text that your guy Sam Darnold might actually have a chance to keep that job in Carolina. I know that makes you happy, and as your friend, it makes me happy for you.
Yeah.
It also, listen, I think the Patriots are going to be able to get Jimmy Garoppolo if they want him for a second round pick. So the question they have to ask themselves is, if, let's say, Justin Fields falls, would you rather have whomever you were going to draft at 15 plus Jimmy Garoppolo, or use those two assets, the 15th pick and the second round pick you were going to trade for Jimmy, for Justin Fields? I would rather have Justin Fields. I would potentially also rather have Trey Lance if he were available. And even if you, it sounds like you, Colin, have a higher regard for Garoppolo's ability than I do, but his availability is terrible. And I don't think it's a stretch to say he is right now the most injury-prone starting quarterback in the NFL.
He is.
He played, even in New England, when he was starting those games because the Patriots were mired in one of their many, many cheating scandals. I can't remember which one. He made it through seven quarters and got hurt. So I think, you know, casting your lot with him when he's had one fully healthy season is risky. So if Fields or Lance is there, I would make the move if I'm New England.
You know, I said this, if I was a Niner fan, and to your point, then basically San Francisco only gave up a second round pick for Garoppolo. I mean, in the world we live in today, Mac Jones, you may have given up three first rounders for a guy you don't know can play. So you only gave up a second rounder for Garoppolo, and he's gotten you to a Super Bowl, won a division. If you wake up this morning and think, we squeezed every last ounce of juice out of that orange, and you don't worry about it, and you just keep it. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Who cares? To me, if I'm a Niner fan and I wake up Monday morning and I think, okay, we've got Garoppolo, who we know can win now, and I get a guy that can at least go up against physically the Mahomes, Josh Allens, and I got an athlete, I would feel great. The idea that you'd get rid of Jimmy, fear he gets hurt, and Mac is starting against Russell Wilson, Stafford, and Kyler Murray, to me as a Niner fan, is terrifying, right?
I've never understood that part of it. That I totally agree. Now, if they draft Mac Jones, it means they're trading Jimmy immediately,
That's right. I would imagine. Yeah.
If they draft Trey Lance, then maybe this is a developmental year. Because keep in mind, Mahomes, first year, didn't play. Sat behind Alex Smith. The Chiefs then traded Alex Smith, and Mahomes became immediately the league's MVP. So I've never understood the fascination with Mac Jones. If you had stayed at 12 and he fell to you there, that is so different than trading the 2022 and 2023 first-round picks to move up to get him. But if you do that, then you are trading Jimmy Garoppolo maybe during the draft.
Okay. The Bucs signed Antonio Brown. I would have not done that. Your thought on why they did that?
Well, I think because he's incredibly cheap. And I think this is a good story for all the young guys who are about to be drafted. Antonio Brown had as productive of a six-year run as any receiver not named Jerry Rice in the history of football. And then he went to Oakland and all of a sudden was smuggling a counterfeit helmet onto the practice field. And everyone's like, all right, he has lost the plot here, boys and girls. And now he's playing for slightly less guaranteed money than the best kickers get. And I don't think it's because he can't play anymore. And so I understand why New England, they believe he'll be on his best behavior because he's not needed there, so they can move off of him. And because you had I will bet you every team in the league this offseason had at least part of a meeting dedicated to, do we want to go after AB? And not a single team, it would appear, decided he was worth $5 million guaranteed. That speaks to, at some point, no matter how good you are on the field, the off-the-field stuff can cost you, you know, any ability to make real money in this league and play on anything except one-year contracts.
Okay, so Dr. J, who I grew up with, probably one of the first athletes in the NBA he came from the ABA. Everybody fell in love with him. He had a shoe deal with Converse, and he had just Dr. J was easy to fall in love with.
Unbelievable. The fro.
Everything.
It was just great.
His highlights, by the way, 40 years later, his highlights hold up. They're insane.
Yep.
But now he's blaming LeBron. LeBron is to blame for the super team. Oh, it's just LeBron's fault. And I thought, oh boy, what's Nick going to say about this? So what are you going to say here?
All right. So listen, everyone belly up to their television because a quick little history lesson on the NBA. On today, Today is actually the 55th anniversary of the Boston Celtics winning their 8th consecutive title of the 1960s. So methinks the 1960s had a super team because a team peeled off 8 in a row. What about the 70s? Well, Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest players ever, he ends up joining up with Lew Alcindor, soon to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, to form arguably the greatest team ever. The very next year, Elgin Baylor, who'd never won a ring, Jerry West, who'd been to 8 finals but never won a ring, and Wilt Chamberlain, who had somehow only won 1 ring, they all get together to form the 72 Lakers. Elgin gets hurt, doesn't matter, super-duper team. They win, I think, 33 in a row, and they win the title. Then the league's a little watered down because the ABA and NBA are competing for talent. In the ABA, Dr. J is annihilating it. The ABA folds. Dr. J instantly gets to an NBA Finals, scores 40 points in an elimination game of those finals, but his team isn't good enough. That's 1977. 1980, he gets back to the NBA Finals, only to face the Los Angeles Lakers. They've got Kareem, they've got a guy named Jamal Wilkes, and a rookie named Magic Johnson. And nothing Dr. J does can be good enough, so he loses. The very next year, Dr. J is the best he's been in the NBA. He wins a league MVP. He gets to a Game 7 of the Conference Finals. They're playing a Boston Celtics team that has Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, Cedric Maxwell, Tiny Nate Archibald, who was still good, and a rookie named Kevin McHale. Shockingly, the Sixers can't win that series. Goes to a Game 7. They lose by 1. Not Dr. J's fault. The next year, Dr. J's still trying to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm the defending league MVP. Gets back to the finals, and who's there? Those damn Lakers again. So what happens? The 1981 MVP, Dr. J, and the 1982 MVP, Moses Malone, they team up together on the 1983 Sixers. And what happens? They form one of the greatest teams ever, who almost sweeps the entire NBA playoffs and wins the title to dethrone the previous super team Lakers and the soon-to-be super team Celtics that only predated the super teams of the Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Bulls, all of it. It's super team after super team after super team, starting 55 years ago today to now. So we want to put that on LeBron because he orchestrated his team instead of having smoke-filled room general managers orchestrate it. That's fine. But the history is not on my guy Dr. J's side.
No, I laugh about this. It used to be like 8 teams, and Boston had the best GM and the most money, and they got all the players. The players now just coordinate it more than the general managers coordinate it, and fans don't like that. Fans don't like when the players coordinate the super team. We're always okay with the GMs and the coaches coordinating it, and agents. That's fine.
Of course. And it's always been there.
Yeah.
The whole NBA history is awesome, awesome players coming together and winning a bunch of titles.
Yep.
That's the NBA's history.
Yep. Nick Wright, good seeing you, buddy.
You as well. Talk to you later.
All right, Nick Wright.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a report this morning the Patriots and the Panthers have done the groundwork on a trade for number 8. What does that mean? They're going to agree to what they're going to swap, but New England doesn't quite know what Atlanta's doing at number 4. So you agree in terms to, okay, we'll give you 2 first-rounders and a 3rd-rounder for this. We'll move up. And so basically New England's laying the groundwork for 8:45 tomorrow night. They're not going to pull this deal off today because they don't know what teams are doing. I'll give you an example. We'll show you the draft board. I'll pretend I'm Bill Belichick sitting in my chair in Nantucket or wherever he sits with his dog last year and did the draft, right? He's controlling the whole operation for New England. So he's sitting there watching the draft. He's already laid the groundwork for Carolina, put the draft board up. Trevor Lawrence goes number 1. He knows that. No problem. Zach Wilson goes 2 to the Jets. He knows that. No problem. He thinks San Francisco's taking Mac Jones, which is fine because he prefers Trey Lance or Justin Fields. He's got Cam. They've run the Cam is a great person for a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields to play behind because they share traits. Mac Jones and Cam do not. Now Belichick's sitting there. And there's no reason to move up for Atlanta because you don't know what they're going to do. So Atlanta takes Kyle Pitts, which is what many think. So I don't need to move up to five because I know Cincinnati's not taking a quarterback. So Belichick's thing is I want to give up the least possible, so I want to be the furthest down. So all of a sudden Cincinnati comes up, and they would probably take Ja'Marr Chase, who Joe Burrow played with, reportedly is lobbying for. Okay, so now I sit there and I think to myself, I don't know what the hell Detroit's doing at seven because they're Detroit. But they've got Goff. Miami's not taking a quarterback. Now, I don't know who Miami's taking. Let's say it's Jalen Waddle, a receiver, Alabama, with Will Fuller, Devontae Parker. That's a really good troika of wide receivers. So now you sit there and you think to yourself, okay, this is why Carolina and New England are doing the deal. Belichick doesn't think Detroit's going to go get a quarterback. But they're Detroit, and Dan Campbell is goofy. So my guess is Detroit, Jared Goff cannot play under pressure, gets Penei Sewell, a once-in-a-lifetime left tackle. Now, this is why they're doing a deal with Carolina, because nine at Denver, you know, if there's both Lance and Justin Fields there, it's going to be hard for Denver not to take one of them. So you make the deal with Carolina, you get the quarterback you prefer, Trey Lance or Justin Fields, whoever it is, Denver then may not take a quarterback. My guess is they do. And also, remember this. Washington, a lot of rumors Washington would move up. It's much harder for Washington to move up into that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 spot. I mean, now Washington could make a deal with Atlanta, and then that could change it, and maybe Belichick calls Carolina and says, I'm out, let's call Detroit. But I think the 8 spot for New England is the spot you should be paying attention to. Because as long as Atlanta goes non-quarterback, there's no reason to move all the way up to 4 and have to give up another first-round pick. Much easier to go 15-8 than 15-4.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Ah. Live in Los Angeles, Hour 3, it's The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. So Denver has made a move. They are acquiring Teddy Bridgewater from Carolina. By the way, you got to be careful. A week ago, Carolina was talking about, hey, we're going to be in the quarterback market. Today the stories are they just traded Teddy Bridgewater away, and they're going to move down in the draft with New England. Sam Darnold's their guy in Carolina. Teams say a lot. It's the same with Denver. Denver, we like Drew Locke. They just went and got Teddy Bridgewater to start. And by the way, one of the things, Joy Taylor joining me, one of the things I talk about all the time, and I get pushback every time, and I'm always right. Every time I've been right. Maturity matters. It will eventually, you'll have to pay the piper if you're immature. So Jameis Winston is wildly, wildly immature in college, but wildly productive in the NFL. And when he went to the market, crickets. He took a $1 million deal. Immaturity. Not talent, not size, not arm. He was wildly productive. Judgment. Baker Mayfield, not fifth year option. That's it. If I'd have told you that you draft Baker Mayfield, he wins a playoff game, you'd be like, oh, they'll sign him to a contract extension. They won't. Only because of maturity. That's the only reason. Johnny Manziel, maturity, out of the league. Cam had no market post Carolina. Moody, not always there. Prime example, Drew Locke. He comes across as too casual, too flip, too cool. There's a lack of kind of like urgency and maturity. They're already moving off him. His numbers are the exact same as Josh Allen's through 16 or 18 starts. Exact same. But the difference is Josh Allen is all football. That is all he's into. Drew Locke, feel like he's got a lot of Baker Mayfield. He's kind of there. This idea, you always argue with me. The fans always argue with maturity. You're going to pay for it in your draft stock or later. The only reason you wouldn't give Baker a contract extension is maturity. Why not? If I'd have told you 4 years ago, Baker comes in, you beat the Steelers in a playoff game, you would have said, oh, he's a huge success. You give him a contract extension. No, Mahomes showed maturity. Justin Herbert, Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson has shown maturity. Lamar Jackson, we don't even like the way he throws. John Harbaugh said yesterday, he's absolutely going to get the extension. We're not even arguing about it. Half of you guys don't even think he can play. But he's mature. He shows up. He's committed. You know he's all in. He's not doing commercials everywhere. This maturity thing is huge. Now, this year, I don't think we have a maturity guy out there, a question maturity guy. But every third, fourth year, there's a guy I'm like, I'm out. Jameis Winston, I'm like, talented, but immature. Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield. Drew Lock to me, nothing against the kid, but he just plays with sort of a coolness. Sometimes I think he wants to be cooler than great. He's just kind of casual, lets it go, takes risk. Can't do that in the NFL. Every possession has to be huge. Dak Prescott has total limitations as a thrower. Dan Mullen came on a week ago on the show. Dan Mullen got the Florida job because of Dak Prescott. And he's like, yeah, he was not really impressed with his arm. It was all the other stuff. Teams, Teddy Bridgewater will always have work. Tyrod Taylor will always have work. Drew Lock, this could be it. So again, don't argue with me on the maturity thing. You will pay the... Jameis Winston had no market. None. Dude's like 6'4.5", big arm, can move around, threw for 5,000 yards. No market. It's not because he can't play. People question his judgment, his maturity. That's why, by the way, Jameis has done a really good job in the last year. Whenever he talks about his commitment. You ever notice that? What does he talk about? Commitment. You notice Cam goes to New England, talks about the buy-in to Belichick. These guys know. They know their reputations hurt them. So they go all in on commit. Cam's been like the perfect citizen. Jameis is like losing weight. I'm into this. He gets emotional. So these guys know. Now, pro sports is very unfair. We ask 22-year-old quarterbacks to be as mature as a 45-year-old man. It's totally unfair. But that's the game. I mean, Drew Lock is no less mature than I was at his age. But I couldn't have been a franchise quarterback. I wasn't mature enough at 24 to be. Russell Wilson was. Andrew Luck was. Justin Herbert is. Trevor Lawrence appears to be. So stop arguing the immaturity thing doesn't matter. You will pay a price for it. If you're seen as somebody who's just too casual, too flip, too cool, you'll pay a price. So Denver's moving off Drew Lock. I mean, they brought in Teddy to play. Okay, they brought in Teddy to play. So let's do a new top 10, top 12 mock draft because this changes things. Now, Denver is saying, according to Schefter, we are still in the quarterback market. Oh, come on. Give me a break. You're going to have three quarterbacks. Vic Fangio needs to win now. Denver's a good football market. You got to start getting players and winning games. So my guess is this is the new mock draft with the Teddy Bridgewater. Okay, Trevor Lawrence won. Let's not waste any time. You don't even have to roll video. Trevor Lawrence is going number one to the Jags. Duh. Zach Wilson is going number two to the Jets. Let's not waste any time. No video, too. I think San Francisco is going to draft Mac Jones. I think the scouts want Trey Lance. I think Lynch wants Trey Lance. I think everybody wants Trey Lance. And they're pushing on Shanahan, but he's the star of the franchise. So my guess is they go Mac Jones. Number four, I think, again, this is a guess. I don't think Atlanta needs a quarterback. They have a new offensive coach. He's great with tight ends, and Kyle Pitts is a once-in-a-decade player. I think Atlanta goes Kyle Pitts number four. Number five is Cincinnati. Again, Joe Burrow played with Ja'Marr Chase. Zach Taylor's an offensive-minded coach. I think you can make real arguments. You go on the offensive line. But this is a draft that's deep in offensive line, and you're drafting at the top of round, so you can get that in the second and third round. You can't get Ja'Marr Chase in the second and third round, so I think they go Ja'Marr Chase, number five, big body, ready to play. You know, people, the scouts I trust are like, listen, he's an NFL guy playing in college. He'll walk in and give you 75 catches. He's ready to play. Right, LSU's got these dudes. Swear to God, nobody has more of these guys than LSU. They just got dudes that are they're NFL players at 18 years old. Then Miami is six. Now, I would go to the offensive line because I think they've addressed their wide receiver stuff. But what you're hearing now is Jalen Waddle from Miami is going to go to Miami, so they're going to have, I mean, they've got Will Fuller and Devontae Parker and a good tight end. Basically, they're saying, Tua, this is a top three receiving core. You can't win with this, you can't win. So I would probably go O-line. They're going to go wide receiver. This is what I think they'll do. Seven is Detroit. Who the hell knows what Detroit's going to do? I would never have hired Dan Campbell. Jared Goff cannot throw under duress. They have got to get a better offensive line fast. and you have a chance to get the best left tackle prospect in multiple years, Penei Sewell, I would take him if I'm Detroit. Again, you could argue for a receiver, but if Jalen Waddle and Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitcher off the board, Jared Goff, remember, before the Rams got Andrew Whitworth, Goff was seen as a disaster. Like, they got a left tackle, they got him an offensive coach, things got better. So I would go with Penei Sewell. Number eight, the story is out. New England, Carolina are working on a trade. I think New England moves into the number eight spot. Carolina needs a left tackle. You can get it later. Needs a corner. You can get it later. Carolina needs more players. They move down. New England's got some players, moves up and gets a quarterback, Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is perfect for Belichick's system. He's, you know, there's a lot of Cam there. Big, strong run, big arm. I think he's a little bit more disciplined player, but that's who I think they'd get. Number nine. Now, Denver's going to tell you they're still in the quarterback market. That's smart business. So somebody may say, let's move up and get him. So Washington, if Washington thinks Denver's still in the quarterback business, Washington may give them a couple of first-round picks. So Denver saying they're in the quarterback business is smart business. If Denver still has the pick, and I'm not so sure Chicago or Washington don't move up, I think they'll take J.C. Horn, the corner. Now, they already addressed corner in free agency, but this defense was a mess last year. As they say, you can never have too many great corners in the NFL. I think Denver would go J.C. Horn. Again, their offensive skill people are fine. Their offensive line's okay. Bridgewater gets the quarterback situation solvent, so I think J.C. Horn. The Cowboys, I think, would have taken J.C. Horn, but they'll take Patrick Surtain or Surtain from Alabama. Well-coached, probably already close to his ceiling. But Dallas has a corner they drafted last year, and like, this gives them another corner. They got 10 picks. I think, you know, Saban's very respected in NFL circles. So you go back-to-back corners, Denver, Dallas, 9-10. 11, now it gets interesting. It's the New York Giants. They've addressed their offensive line. Rashawn Slater is out there, but they've addressed their offensive line in the last 2 years. And they already went and got Kenny Golladay. And they went and got Kyle Rudolph. So they don't need a receiver or a tight end. There's not a tight end you would take. I don't know exactly what the Giants do. Devontae Smith is going to probably be the highest graded player available. And so you go Kenny Golladay, Devontae Smith, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Kyle Rudolph, Saquon Barkley. And your takeaway is, if you're Dave Gettleman, Gettleman doesn't move down in the draft. That's not what he does. So Gettleman's going to say, bottom line is, I will know by Thanksgiving if this kid can play. Whereas an offensive lineman, Rashawn Slater did not play last year. And there may be a feeling like, well, if I bring Rashawn Slater in, he didn't play college last year, he could be good. But I want to know right now if Daniel Jones can play. Dave Gettleman needs to win, by the way, or Dave Gettleman's going to be out of jobs. So I think he may just say, I'm going to go receiver again. We are stacked offensively. Devontae will help me now. Because I do think some people worry about Slater having opt out. He's kind of a guard tackle. So then at 12, Philadelphia, who I think would have taken Devontae Smith, I don't think they want to move up in the draft because they got too many holes. I think they probably take the best graded player available, and that is Rashawn Slater, the offensive lineman. Their offensive line is good, but getting really old, and I think Philadelphia probably goes with him. So that's kind of what it feels like this morning. Those are the needs. You know, the Giants are very interesting because I could certainly argue myself out of wide receiver. But they've got a real issue here. They think Joe Judge is the right coach. Jason Garrett, probably as the coordinator, gets a second head coaching job next year. That's what I hear. So as long as you got Jason Garrett and as long as you got Joe Judge, who you like, and you've addressed the offensive line, you got Golladay, Sterling Shepard, two good tight ends, star back. Devontae is a plug-and-play guy. He'll play now. He'll play. Devontae, whether he lasts forever, I don't know. But he's going to play. He's been in a pro offensive system with Sark. He'll play now. And, God, the Giants will go from needing a wide receiver to having a surplus of them. And then I think Philadelphia, which, by the way, I think they'd like – there's reports they would move up. I don't buy they're going to move up. I don't think they have a good enough roster to give up picks. Then I think you just take the best player available in the offensive line. Hey, Jalen Hurts, it can't hurt to have, you know, more protection.